Okay, Michael.
Good morning. Good morning to everyone. It's nice to see you all. Rabbi, I just think you're wonderful and your message is superb, fantastic, terrific. I have 5 children, by the way, so I'm helping.
You did your share.
Yeah. You picked out, of course, the shirt that I'm wearing, which says love. And so I think what I want to do is underscore that and give everyone a perspective of where I'm placed in relation to this concept of spirituality. I was raised Roman Catholic. At one point in time, I think I was 15, I wanted to be a priest. I went to a minor seminary and declared myself having the desire to be a priest. And by grade 11, I began to question. And I began to question what they were saying to me. And I began to question, essentially, the relationship between myself and spirit. That's essentially what became my question. And I walked away from the religion and embarked upon a spiritual quest. And I started studying Judaism. Then I studied Muslim. Then I studied Buddhism. And Buddhism essentially led me to native spirituality. It was one line in a book, The Bringers of the Dawn, by Barbara Marciniak. And in the book, it said, if you're interested in Buddhism, you should check out native spirituality. And so I did. I began to investigate what is the culture of the indigenous. The conclusion I came to in my study was that the core of the culture is spirituality. Now, I'm a lawyer. I practiced law in the, I guess you could say, the regular way for 20 years. And then I had an epiphany. And that epiphany, it found me leaving a law partnership, leaving a marriage. Everything was just over. And an opportunity presented at that, what I would call crisis. And that opportunity came from a government official seeking to know what was the core cultural benchmark for Indigenous people, because they were Tourism Canada and they were looking to understand the culture. And so I told them, I said, well, you need to interview elders, wisdom keepers. They're in all the tribes, and they're usually men or women who have dedicated themselves to a spiritual path. And if you speak to them, you'll know, you'll have a better idea. And he said, well, who am I going to find to talk to them? He said, they're all over North and South America. And I said, well, me. So from that, I made a contract and left the practice of law for 5 years. And I interviewed Native elders all over North and South America, mostly Peru and Mexico for South America, and all over the United States and Canada. And on that journey, met a man from Cusco, Peru, by the name of Wilaru Huayta, Wilaru Huayta. Now, I have to tell you that the moment I met him was 1998, but I had come upon him before, because, you know, I was a student. I was a total student of spirituality. So I was thirsty. I read everything I could get my hands on. And I came upon an article entitled The Awakening in 1994. And after I read the Awakening, and I'll send it to all of you, it was maybe 3 pages. But what it meant for me was 16 years of study. I'd studied Alice Bailey, Helena Blavatsky, Rudolf Steiner, Krishnamurti. I'd studied the Hindu religion and all of the yogis. I had studied all of these things that you could say are classified as esoteric knowledge. And when I saw The Awakening, it represented to me that 16 years of study. And I said to myself, how could this be? That there is this person who lives in Cusco, Peru, who knows all of that studying that I had spent 16 years, and then made a vow that I would try and find this man. Now, I don't know, is it better, Reiner, for you to translate now?
Yeah, I'll translate this first part. Also Michael ist Anwalt in Kanada. Er ist der führende Anwalt für die bald einzureichende Class Action und wird unterstützt von einer Reihe von anderen Anwälten. Viele von denen sind Indianer. Andere sind, das hat er jetzt nicht gesagt, aber wir haben das aus früheren Gesprächen, andere sind inzwischen pensionierte Richter und pensionierte Anwälte. Er ist römisch-katholisch geboren und wollte zu irgendeinem Zeitpunkt sogar mal Priester werden. Aber in der 11. Klasse hat er angefangen, sich Fragen zu stellen und hat sich dann gefragt, hier, das ist irgendwie nicht alles, was ich hier sehen kann, da muss es noch mehr geben, und hat sich dann, hat dann sozusagen verschiedene Religionen studiert. Den jüdischen Glauben, den muslimischen Glauben, Hinduismus, Buddhismus, bis er dann am Ende sich gefragt hat, da drüber oder da drunter, da spielt irgendwie das ganze Spirituelle eine große Rolle. Er hatte dann eine Krise, die Ehe flog ihm um die Ohren, sein Job hat ihm auch keinen Spaß mehr gemacht, aber das muss man ergänzen, er hat es jetzt nicht gesagt, er ist einer der erfolgreichsten Anwälte in Kanada gewesen und immer noch. Und dann bot sich ihm, da hat er so eine Art Erscheinung gehabt, sagt er, da bot sich ihm die Möglichkeit, sich um die, um dieses Spirituelle mal ein bisschen genauer zu kümmern. Und zwar wurde damals gerade danach geforscht, was steckt denn im Kern eigentlich hinter den Eingeborenen? Die Eingeborenen sind die Indianer, nicht nur die in Kanada, hat er dann gesagt, sondern auch die in den USA und in Südamerika. Und er hat dann 5 Jahre lang sich aus dem Anwaltsberuf verabschiedet und 5 Jahre lang mit den Indianern in Kanada, USA und in Südamerika geforscht oder an ihnen geforscht, mit ihnen geforscht und jemanden kennengelernt, der ihn sehr beeindruckt hat. Er heißt Villaru Hiata aus Peru. Und mit dem hat offenbar was Neues begonnen. Okay, I stopped at, yeah. I just stopped introducing, or you told us about how you met Willaru Huayata and how you read the book The Awakening. Well, it's not a book, it's just a 3-page or, yeah. Right. Okay, go ahead.
Okay. And I should mention at this point, too, that when I took that sabbatical in 1995 to 1999, immediately I met an elder not 2 hours from my home, who turned out to be the spiritual leader of the Algonquin people, which is mostly the province of Ontario and Quebec in Canada. And here's a picture. I don't know if you can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a picture of the elder that I worked with. He passed in 2011 at the age of 97. So I worked with this man for 16 years. And the best way to describe him is to say a combination of Mahatma Gandhi and Martin Luther King. And he was just an incredible incorporation of love and compassion and forgiveness. And he would often say, Michael, we know what they did to us, but we forgive them. But now we must speak, and they don't want to talk to us. He used to say to me all the time, Michael, they call that the Department of Justice, but what I see it as is just us. So he had a vision of how things needed to change in the world, and he would often have a spiritual gathering every year in August, and there would be 500-600 people that would show up, and mostly white people wanting to learn about the ways of the Red Way. Now, I just tell you all that because I will circle back to Father or to Grandfather William Kamanda. But back to Willaru. When I read that article in 1994, I made a vow that I would meet this man, and the occasion arose in 1998. At the end of my journey interviewing elders, I was given the opportunity to host a gathering. And I brought in elders from all over, Hopi, Mayan, Inca, and then throughout the United States, Canada. We had an 8-day gathering, and it was just spectacular. We had our first circle, and that was our first opportunity to bring Willaru up from Cusco, Peru. And in that first circle, I said a prayer. And this prayer comes from Alice Bailey material. It's in every book. I'm going to say it to you right now, just because it's a very powerful mantra. It's called the Great Invocation. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Now, when I said that prayer, Willaru immediately came over to me after the end of the circle and said, "Where did you learn that prayer?" And I told him, and then he said, "Oh, I learned that prayer directly from the masters." So what he was telling me was that what I had read in a book and all that I had accumulated in a book, he never read that book. But he was given the same message. Now, his story is quite spectacular. When he was 35, he was sitting in a bar with a bunch of people drinking beer and said to them, "There's got to be more to life than this." Now, he had heard about ascended masters, and he had heard about crystal cities in the inner earth. So he decided to do an Amazon walkabout, and he put on a backpack, and he went out into the jungle, and he went from tribe to tribe. No, 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 and then yes. "These things exist," they told him. "However, you are not ready. You need to be initiated." One of the things that they taught him was that the commandment that says, "Honor thy father and thy mother," has nothing to do with your biological father and mother. It has to do with this father, which is your third eye and wisdom, and this mother, which is your heart, which is love. And so within every human being exists the divine. And that divine is to be honored in wisdom and love, that this exists in every human being. And in order for a human being to change, they need the help of their mother and their father. Therefore, the reason of honoring the inner divine. In the Inca tradition, there is a saying, Wiracocha. And Wiracocha means from the divine in me to the divine in you. Very much like Namaste and those kinds of greetings. It's the acknowledgement of the existence of the divine within. Go ahead, Rainer.
Also, berichtet davon, dass diesen Willaru aus Peru kennengelernt hat und dass danach immer wieder jeden Sommer im August, glaube ich, die dann auch Vereinigungen gefeiert hat, wo dann aus Südamerika, Kanada und den USA Indianer gekommen sind. Aber vor allem, sagt er, da waren dann ganz viele Leute, 500 bis 600 Leute, vor allem Weiße, die irgendwie diese Kultur kennenlernen wollten. Und er hat aus diesem, nicht Buch war das, sondern so ein kleines Pamphlet, glaube ich, da hat er einen bestimmten, wie man würde es übersetzen können als Gebet, nehme ich an, wahrscheinlich, ja, ein Gebet, so eine Anrufung an Gott hat er gelernt und hat das dann bei einer besonders großen Veranstaltung, wo dann auch der Willaru gekommen ist aus Peru, hat er dieses Gebet gesprochen, also die Anrufung des Spirituellen, so sage ich es jetzt mal stark verkürzt, und da hat er Willaru ihn gefragt, wo er das denn wohl her hat, Und er hat gesagt, ja, aus diesem Buch. Und dann sagt der Villarroel, er hätte das von seinen Älteren, also von den Menschen, denen man dort besondere Weisheit zutraut, gelernt. Haben wir noch was vergessen hier?
Ja, das war das Wesentliche. Das ist eben ein Gruß, ist der in diesen Glaubensgemeinschaften dann von Person zu Person gesagt wird. Ja. Und das ist eben die Überzeugung ist, dass dass in jedem Menschen dieser göttliche Funken ist, der sich in Weisheit und Liebe zum Ausdruck kommt. Und sich in dieser Form dann eben auch begrüßt, indem man in dem anderen Menschen sozusagen Gottes Geschöpf wieder sieht.
Ja, einen hatte ich noch vergessen, und zwar war das ein anderer Berater in Anführungsstrichen oder Lehrer von ihm, ein alter Führer der des Algonquin-Volkes, die in Kanada überwiegend zu Hause sind. Von dem hat er 16 Jahre lang viel gelernt. Er ist im Jahre 2011 dann mit 97 Jahren verstorben. Und das ist der sagte, Love, Compassion and Forgiveness, also Liebe, Mitgefühl und Vergebung. Das ist es, was zählt. Und er sagt, wir wissen als Indianer, wir wissen, was die uns angetan haben. Das war ja leider auch schon ein Genozid, der da in den USA und Kanada versucht wurde. Sogar ziemlich erfolgreich versucht wurde. Wir wissen, was uns angetan wurde, aber wir müssen das vergeben. Und jetzt müssen wir sprechen, aber die hören uns nicht zu. Die hören uns nicht zu. The last thing I translated is after the, I'm going to call this a prayer that you said, I had forgotten to tell about the friend or teacher of yours who died in 2011 at the age of 97 after you had worked with him for 16 years, and how he had said that love and compassion and forgiveness is what really counts, and that despite the things that the white people had done to his people, the Algonquin, he said, we have to forgive. But then he said, we must speak, but they don't want to talk to us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's right. So did you want me to continue now?
Yeah, please.
Yeah, okay. So Willeroo is with this tribe, and they teach him, basically they teach him strong meditative practices to ground him in the idea of his father and his mother, and putting him into a situation in relation to that. They also taught him about the first step of the Inca teachings. I don't know if any of you have ever seen an Inca cross. I'm just looking to see if I have one. No, I don't have one, but it starts at the top and it goes like this, and then it goes like that, and then it goes like this. Mm-hmm. So three steps on each side of the Inca cross, three steps here, three steps there, three steps at the bottom, three steps. So the Inca cross embodies the Inca teachings. And so within the first step of the Inca teachings is the elimination of the egos. And the elimination of the egos reside in the seven, what is referred to in the Christian religion as the seven cardinal sins: lust, anger, pride, envy, greed, laziness, and gluttony. And it is said that each human being is invaded by these seven egos. And my teacher has said, if you wish to impart to humans how to visualize this and see this and understand it better, assign an animal to each ego, and then ask people to see how they feed that ego. So the black dog is lust. Anger is the bull. Pride is the peacock. Envy is a seagull. It'll take your French fries. Laziness is a monkey in South America called the puño puño. Sloth-like, so lazy, can hardly peel a banana to feed itself. And greed and gluttony is taken by the pig. So in six animals, we incorporate the seven egos, and then we must become an observer of self. and see where it is that we feed the animal. So he says, give this example. A man is walking down the beach. He sees a woman in a bikini. The black dog comes out. The thought is he becomes lust in essence. As he goes further down the beach, someone yells at him, "You bugger, you owe me money, I hate you." The black dog retreats and the bull comes out. Goes a little further down the way and he sees a beautiful mansion, gorgeous home. And the black dog, or the bull retreats and the seagull comes out. And on and on and on and on. And when you contemplate it on a daily basis, how it is that we feed our egos and how we become that emotion and how that suppresses the mother-father existence and how that elongates us from spirit because it puts us so much more in the material world. So the Incas say the first step in the raising of consciousness is the elimination of the seven egos. They say, you can't do this by yourself. You must have a linkage to spirit. And that linkage is in you already. That linkage is existing here in the third eye, and it's existing here in the heart. In the indigenous tradition, one of the most important personages is the sacred firekeeper. The sacred firekeeper is important because the fire, the sacred fire, is an acknowledgement of the life-giving of the sun. And so the life-giver, the sun, is the reason that we exist, and it's the example of the existence of spirit, because it's the fire that is in everything. It's in everything, and nothing exists without it. So within the concept of that idea, the human being has three fires. They have the fire of the head, which is electric. They have the fire of the heart, which is also electric. And they have the fire of the loins, which is electric. This is electric fire. The heart is solar fire. And the fire of the loins is fire by friction. So what you have is every human being is a fire keeper. Because how you tend the fire of the head, how you tend the fire of the heart, and how you tend the fire of the loins equals who you are. Go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah. Also, die Meditation, die er im Rahmen seiner spirituellen Forschung durchgemacht hat, haben sich offenbar maßgeblich an den Inka orientiert. Hat da eben darauf angesprochen, dass die Inka, es gibt ein Inka-Kreuz, das ist aber wie eine Treppe gebaut, auf der man drei Schritte gehen muss. Das verkörpert, also dieses Inka-Kreuz, diese Treppe verkörpert die Lehre der Inka-Spiritualität. Und der erste Schritt, den man gehen muss, um zu dieser Spiritualität zu gelangen, ist, sich von den sieben Egos, das würden wir wohl übersetzen als die sieben Todsünden, zu lösen. Es ist jedenfalls genau das Gleiche, was ich da eben gehört habe. Und diese sieben Todsünden, davon kann man sich nur lösen, wenn man sich quasi auch mal selbst von außen beobachtet und sieht, wie man reagiert auf die Werte von anderen, auf die Frauen von anderen. Davon muss man sich also lösen. Und nun spricht er weiter darauf an, dass es die Tradition der indigenen Völker ist, also der Indianer auf dem gesamten amerikanischen Kontinent ist. Sie glauben, dass jeder Mensch in sich Feuer trägt, drei Feuer im Kopf, im Herzen und in den Lenden. Das erste ist das elektrische, er hat zwar alles drei als elektrisch bezeichnet, aber hat dann das zweite, das Herz, noch mal ein bisschen präzisiert, das sei das Sonnenfeuer und das dritte, die Lenden, das sei die Reibung, Friction. Okay.
Okay. So having those instructions, he was given those instructions for almost 2 years, and his practice was to meditate and take teachings from their elders. And then they said, you're ready. We're going to take you to a place in the jungle, and you'll know what to do. So they took him deeper in the jungle and they just left him to come to whatever he was going to come to. Because remember, his burning questions were, are there such things as ascended masters? Are there such things as crystal cities in the inner earth? So as he sat there for 3 days. All around him were man-eating snakes, wild boars, wild dogs, wild animals that could have destroyed him. But as he says, they taught me that when I'm with my father and I'm with my mother, I'm in love. I'm not in fear. Because my father and my mother allow me to concentrate on the idea that I am divine and that the divine is in me. So there is no fear. So as he said, he sat there for 3 days. These are all words that he spoke to me directly and said on the third day, he saw an opening in the thick foliage that he had not seen before and a light. And he was attracted to that. He got up. And as he said, he got up. It's as if those animals that were there parted and allowed him to walk towards that. And it was a cave, an enormous cave. And he went in. And he walked and walked and walked. And then he came upon a 15-foot black man who would be a Lemurian. So Lemuria was known as the land of Mu. And it was a continent in the Pacific that sank in the Pacific. Then it was followed by Atlantis, which was a continent in the Atlantic, and it sank into the Atlantic. I'll come back to that, but let me just say that within the concept of who he was encountering, it was in Lemurian times, human beings were 15 to 18 feet tall. If you go into Mexico and Central and South America and see some of the temple sites, you'll see that the steps are not made for 6-foot people. They're made for at least 12 to 15 foot tall people. You'll remember the statues in Easter Island, which is what you see is a very big body to the waist. So you probably see 7 or 8 feet, but it's only to the waist because they're depicting the size of humanity during Lemuria. And Easter Island is a remnant of Lemuria. It didn't sink, it stayed up. The same thing with Hawaii staying up, if you will. So he sees the light, he's with the Lemurian and they communicate, and the Lemurian offers him an ear of corn made of solid gold and turns and points further in the cave. And so Willeroo knows to just continue the journey. So he continues to walk and walk and walk and walk. He says, it seemed like miles. And then he came upon a table and he knew instinctively to put the ear of corn on the table. And when he did, the wall parted and in he went to a crystal city in the inner earth. And he was instructed by ascended masters from the Inca tradition. So you may want to stop there, Rainer.
Okay. Der Willeroo, der, um den es hier geht, der die Geschichte, der Michael Swinmurt die Geschichte erzählt hat, von seinen Instruktionen sagte er, als offenbar jüngerer Mann, Mitte 30 oder sowas, wollte dieses Spirituelle erfahren und daraufhin haben ihn die Älteren an einen Platz im Dschungel gebracht, in Südamerika, da ist ja aus Peru der Mann, voller wilder Tiere und aller möglichen bedrohlichen Gefahren, die er da sehen konnte. Er hat dann aber am dritten Tag ein Licht gesehen und ist in Richtung dieses Lichts gegangen. Die Tiere oder das, was bedrohlich war, hat Platz gemacht und dann kam er in eine riesige Höhle. Und da traf er auf einen schwarzen 15 Fuß, also etwa 4 Meter großen Mann. Er weist darauf hin, dass das tatsächlich einen realen Hintergrund hat, weil vor langer Zeit offenbar, wie man an den Osterinseln, den Figuren da erkennen kann, wie man aber auch an den in den Tempeln, den Stufen in Südamerika sehen kann, tatsächlich die Menschen sehr viel größer gewesen sind. Er ist dann durch diese Höhle gegangen und für Meilen und Meilen weitergegangen, bis er dann irgendwann auf sowas wie einen Kristallpalast getroffen ist, wenn ich das richtig verstanden habe.
So we're ending right here with the, was it a crystal what?
Crystal City.
Also ein Kristallpalast. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. So the what happened then is that he was told to go to Machu Picchu. Now, Machu Picchu is the world famous site that is at the end of what's called the Sacred Valley. And the Sacred Valley in Peru is just outside of Cusco. And it's called the Sacred Valley for a reason, because throughout that valley, the architecture is all nature. And that architecture speaks to teachings everywhere in the valley. There are symbols that speak to the teachings of the Inca all throughout. And you should understand that throughout the Mother Earth, there are sacred places where crystal cities exist in the inside of the earth. In the Himalayas, this is true. In the Andes, this is true. In the Rockies, this is true. In other words, sacred places exist on the Mother Earth that have that kind of higher energy. And the pyramids in Egypt are an example. The Sacred Valley in Peru, all throughout Europe, where the Cathars were in southern France and wiped out by the Inquisition. All of these places are sacred places. And you'll remember that I told you about all these animals that were around Willeroo when he was meditating and contemplating what he was going to do for his next step. And he said to me, Michael, this is very important. The dark forces guard the sacred places. Remember this, very important. The dark forces guard the sacred places. And what he meant was, and what you can take from it, is that until you yourself are pure, you cannot penetrate into the other vibration of spirit that exists on the Mother Earth. And so Willeroo explained it this way by saying, we exist in the third dimension, breadth, width, and length. There is the fourth dimension. That fourth dimension is in the inner earth. It's a higher vibration. So on the Mother Earth, there are 48 cosmic laws. You cannot bend those laws. The law of electricity, the law of return, the law of gravity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 48 cosmic laws in the third dimension. But in the fourth dimension, there's only 24 cosmic laws, half as many. And the reason that there's half as many is because the vibration is higher, and therefore life is easier. So the story about Adam and Eve is about the story of humanity emerging from the inner earth. So it goes like this. In this solar system, we have seven solar races. The seven solar races begin with Adamic and Hyperborean. And we were in the middle, in the middle of the earth. We were born in the womb of the mother. So Mother Earth, we were born in her. And at that point, we were androgynous, very spiritual, and existing in the vibration of the fourth dimension. And that was the first solar race and the second solar race. The third solar race, we expressed the desire to come out on the surface of the earth. And that was granted, and that's the story of the fall of Adam and Eve leaving paradise. So they left the fourth dimension, and they came to the third dimension, where things are a little harder, where there's 48 cosmic laws, and it's not such a high vibration. And within that third solar race was the Lemurian, and the continent was in the Pacific. And they rose to a great height, technologically advanced, spiritually advanced, and then the egos took over. And they fell into their egos in the materialistic world, and they were put away by the great flood, which had the land of Mu submerged in the Pacific. And as I said, Easter Island and Hawaii are the remnants of that continent. Then came the fourth solar race, which is Atlantis. And Plato talks about Atlantis very much. And in that fourth solar race, they rose to a great height, technologically advanced, much more advanced than we are, high spiritual awareness. Egos took over, fell into materialism, and that continent was submerged. And the remnants of it are places like Greece, the United Kingdom, and the Bahamas. That's how vast that continent was. We are the fifth solar race. The first one is Adamic, Hyperborean. The third is Lemurian. The fourth is Atlantis. We are the fifth, Aryan, not Hitler's Aryan, but the constellation Ares, A-R-I-E-S. And also, this is really where the root of Hinduism is. You'll find the root of Hinduism in the Aryan race. So this fifth solar race, which is us, we are headed to the sixth solar race and the seventh. It is said that a year for the gods, a year for us is 365 days. A year for the gods is 26,000 years. And they say that in that 26,000 years, there are four seasons: iron, silver, bronze, golden. I'm sorry, golden, silver, bronze, iron. We have left the Iron Age and we are going to the Golden Age. In a 26,000 year period, every human being has 108 lifetimes. You may see or reflect if you see a Buddhist altar. On the Buddhist altar, you'll see the number 108, because we each have 108 lifetimes in a 26,000 year period. And we are coming here to everyone's 107th or 108th lifetime at this moment, because we are moving into a bigger cycle. Go ahead, Rainer.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Er sagt, das kommt alles von diesem peruanischen Menschen, den er kennengelernt hat. Er sagt, in unserem Solarsystem gibt es sieben solare Rassen. Die dritte ist das, was wir in der Bibel mit Adam und Eva übersetzen. Damals gab es ein großes, helles, technisch weit entwickelt, eine große, helle, weit entwickelte Welt. Aber die sogenannten Egos sind, also diese Todsünden, kamen irgendwie in die Quere. Dadurch wurde dann diese Welt zerstört. Die Reste davon sind die Osterinseln und die hawaiianischen Inseln. Dann gab es die vierte solare Rasse, die ebenfalls weit nach vorne gedrungen waren. Auch da kamen wieder die sogenannten Todsünden oder die Egos in die Quere. Auch das versank, so wie Atlantis. Und übrig geblieben sind Griechenland, England und die Bahamas. Und jetzt sind wir offenbar, wenn ich das hier richtig verstanden habe, in der fünften Solarzone oder Rasse. Das ist die arische, aber nicht die von Hitler, sondern das ist die Aries-Rasse. Bitte?
Der Widder.
Der Widder, genau. Und die sechste und siebte kommen noch. In jeder dieser Solarzonen oder Rassen gibt es oder gehen die Götter davon aus, dass ein Jahr, unser normales Menschenjahr, 354 Tage zwar sind, aber in diesen Rassen sind es 26.000 Jahre. Und er weist darauf hin, dass es da auch in jedem dieser Jahre
verschiedene Seasons gibt, also wie heißt das nochmal? Saisons, ja, Seasons irgendwie Frühling, Sommer, Herbst und Winter, aber Gold, Silber und das dritte habe ich vergessen, Eisen, und wir sind auf dem Weg vom Eisen in das goldene Zeitalter, ist damit wohl gemeint. Und zwar ist das ein bisschen angekoppelt an die buddhistischen Lehren, den buddhistischen Altar, wonach es 108 Lebenszeiten gibt, vielleicht auch Jahre.
I didn't quite understand the last thing you said about the 108, was it lifetimes?
Yes, 108 lifetimes in a 26,000 year cycle.
Also, in dem 26.000 Jahre alten Zyklus gibt es 108 Lebenszeiten. Okay, I got that.
Okay, so the understanding of these raising of consciousness is the critical feature for the Inca. So the Inca would say a master has 100% consciousness, and we come into physical experience with 3% of consciousness. So that in essence, we have 97% of consciousness to make up in order to raise ourselves to the level that we embody the divine. I mean, if you read any Hindu texts and you read about yogis that go into the cave and meditate for 20 years, and they come out glowing and filled with the divine, the Inca teaching is you can do that also in your normal life, but it becomes a situation of having a relationship to spirit. Now, it must be known that the Pope actually in 900 took out the concept of spirit and basically said, we're going to deal with body and mind, but that spirit stuff, that's got to go. And spirit around that time was embodied in people like the Druids and the Essenes and the Cathars. And these were associations of humans who were supposedly pagans, but were really embodying the same teachings that the Inca were speaking to, that they were practicing this. In the Inca teaching, the second step, which is going to have maybe a difference with the rabbi about population and my own description of having five children. The second step for the raising of consciousness from the Inca teachings is called sacred alchemy. And sacred alchemy means sacred sex between a man and a woman. And that sacred sex is not for procreation. That sacred sex is for the raising of consciousness. Because as you see, in that tapestry behind me, what we're dealing with here are the seven chakras. So the seven chakras that we find in every human being represent a relationship to the seven egos and a relationship to the number seven, which exists so much everywhere. But let's just do the chakras for a moment. Like the crown chakra, the third eye chakra, the throat chakra, the heart chakra, the solar plexus chakra. And then at the loins, note this, it is called the sacral center. And that's where the word sacred comes from. The sacral center, and then the base of the spine. So those are the seven chakras. And within what the Sanskrit word for chakra is wheel of energy. And so most human beings are operating below the belt. They're operating at their sacral or loin chakra and their base chakra. Base chakra is survival, and sex is desire. And so most people are operating on the basis of survival and what they get, their needs met. And what happens is the energy doesn't go to the, it goes directly from the lower two chakras to the mind, and it skips the heart. And so the whole idea from the Inca tradition and eliminating the egos is getting a person to begin to understand that the energy they're vibrating with needs to be raised. And they need to raise their vibration by having it be transmitted through their heart and then into their head, because the mental, emotional body is directed by the egos rather than by their relationship with their mother and their father. Go ahead, Rainer.
Okay, this is very complicated, but I'm going to do my best. Also, um das Bewusstsein zu erweitern, haben die Inka gesagt, also erstmal, man hat 100% Bewusstsein, wir aber als normale Menschen und damals wohl auch schon benutzen nur 3% davon. Um also ein höheres Bewusstsein zu erlangen, wie es ja auch die Hindu versuchen, muss man etwas tun. Und er hat nochmal darauf hingewiesen, dass der Papst um 900 den Geist, also den Spirit, praktisch entsorgt hat und gesagt hat, wir kümmern uns jetzt nur noch um Körper und Verstand, Body and Mind. Damit hat er allerdings die Menschen, die es damals gab, als zu Heiden gemacht, die im Grunde genauso lebten wie die Inka und die daran geglaubt haben, dass man sein Bewusstsein erweitern kann. Er hat dann eben noch auf die 7 Chakras aus dem indischen Glauben, aus dem Hinduismus hingewiesen und darauf, dass die meisten von uns nur auf diesem Überlebenschakra aufbauen, aber nicht auf dem Level, den man braucht, wo es die höhere Energie gibt, wo man dann in die höhere Energie aufsteigen kann, beziehungsweise dann eben dieses höhere Bewusstsein kommen kann mit den 100%. Okay. And
I'm sorry that it's so deep, but I'll be able to bring it into simplistic terms. I just have to give you the basis so that people can understand that it is that how deep it really is, and really, really, when I get near the end here, there's hope that comes out of it. So
that's good, because we need to get there. To yeah, the hope point.
Absolutely. So having said the part about Willeroo when he's in the cave, then what they told him is they told him to go to Machu Picchu. And so in Machu Picchu, he spent 2 years. And what he did was he made an arrangement with the guards that when the tourists left at 5 p.m, he would go in and he would spend the night. He did this for 2 years. A man and a woman is the perfect situation of it, but any combination for anyone in terms of meditative practice is open. So just to say that the symbol depicted the sacred art of healing. Now the sacred art of healing has been turned into a symbol of death. So the original purpose of the Caduceus of Mercury, which is the twin serpents around the staff, the tongues touching. So the staff represents the chakras, and the serpents represent Ida and Pingali, which are two energies in the male and the female, left and right, so that the energy goes up from the left to the right nostril, and the energy goes up from the right to the left nostril. So you see the serpent, and then our DNA is serpent, it's spiral. So everything is spiral in terms of the consciousness, and therefore raising all the time is what the Inca teachings are about. The third step of the Inca teaching was a man and a woman teaching in unconditional love what they learned from practicing the first two, elimination of the ego and sacred alchemy. This is the prescription for the perfect development of the human being. These teachings you've never heard. You've never heard anyone speak to you about the teachings in this way. the Inca were so advanced that if you see the architecture of the Sacred Valley or anywhere in Peru, you're going to see higher consciousness, a mind which is of a higher consciousness, showing you in the physicality what it is that we need to do. But we don't have enough teachers, we don't have enough people to speak in this way. Okay, go ahead, Reiner.
You're giving a lot of details. I know that most of the people who are listening to us probably will not be able to follow us. So I'm going to translate this, but we're going to have to come to the hope portion.
I am.
Okay, good.
I am.
Also, er hat sehr, sehr viele Details geliefert, die, glaube ich, für uns im Moment zu viel sind. Also, der Willaru war dann in Machu Picchu, dieser berühmten Inka-Stadt, für 2 Jahre, um da noch weiter sich spirituell weiterzubilden. Dann hat man ihm gesagt, so, jetzt weißt du genug, jetzt kannst du dir am besten deine Indianerklamotten ausziehen und andere zivilisierte Klamotten anziehen und die Menschen lehren, wie diese Bewusstseinserweiterung funktioniert. Michael hat ja noch darauf hingewiesen, dass es hier eine besondere Form des Bewusstseins gibt, nämlich diejenige sozusagen heiligen, also Sacred Alchemy heißt das, also heilige Alchemie, da gemeint ist damit heiliger Sex, der nichts mit der Fortpflanzung zu tun hat, sondern so eine Art reiner Sex ist. Das würde zu perfekter Gesundheit führen, dann kann man nicht an irgendwas erkranken. Wenn man das ist offenbar identisch mit dem Bewusstseinszustand, wenn man das erreichen kann. Der dritte Schritt, der erste war die Befreiung von dem Ego oder Todsünden. Der zweite war die Reise sozusagen, bis er dann zu diesem Punkt kommt, an dem er diese Sacred Alchemy lernt. Der dritte Schritt ist dann die Vollendung, nämlich dass Mann und Frau, vermutlich aber wenn es um Schwule geht, Mann und Mann und so weiter, durch bedingungslose Liebe so eine Art Perfektion erreichen. Das scheint dann, so wie ich das verstanden habe, auch wenn er sagt, das haben die meisten von uns noch nie gehört, aber das scheint der Zustand zu sein, den die Inka damals schon erreicht hatten. Die hatten offenbar eine sehr fortgeschrittene spirituelle Ebene erreicht. So you're saying that's what the Inca had reached back then, because they were apparently... would you say so far ahead of the rest of the world, or is it just that it's a different type of spirituality?
No, they were so far ahead of the rest of the world. And I thank you for doing that, because here's the segue to that. Today, presently in Colombia, in the Santa Marta region, there are the Kogi, K-O-G-I. And the Kogi live at 16,000 feet in the Andes in Santa Marta. And there are 2 films that you can get on the internet. One is called The Kogi from 1990, and another one is called Luna, L-U-N-A. And it's about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. But it chronicles the people who live there. They have 3 tribes below them, and the high elevated ones are at the top. We couldn't be with them physically, because their vibration is too high. They're so advanced. But they're on the physical plane to assist us. They call us the younger brother, and they refer to themselves as the elder brother. And their messages are inspired, and take that word in English, inspired, in spirit. That's what inspiration means, in spirit. So these people are in existence right now. No one knows about them. No one knows about the Kogi, but they embody what I just spoke to you about, the 3 steps. They practice elimination of the ego, sacred alchemy, and they are the teachers who are teaching us in unconditional love. But we don't even know that they exist, because we pay no attention to it. And this is the idea that what I'm trying to get across, there's a profound depth to the Mayan, Inca, Hopi, Aztec traditions that are worthy of investigation in order for every individual to understand. And here's the real message. If we wish to change the world, we have to change ourselves. That's the message. And what the Inca were doing, where they were giving us a prescription of how to change ourselves. And then they said, but you don't have to do it alone, because you have your father and you have your mother. They're always with you. The story of the prodigal son and daughter. The prodigal son and daughter leave the mansion, go out into the material world, and discover that they are not happy. And then they come back to their mansion, and they discover that their father and their mother never left them. They were always there. So the real essence of the message here is that in order to bring about change, first, we need to change ourselves. And when we're changing ourselves, we're changing the world. Because when I change myself, I have now brought a new energy. I have brought something different to the table. What the rabbi said about the concept of God, you know, the Hindus would describe God as generating, organizing, and destroying. And they would say that those three personages are Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva. And what we're in right now is the energy of Shiva, which is destroying. We're in the energy of change, which is to bring the institutions that are causing the harm down. You'll notice that what's happening in a lot of religions is that they're pulling back, they're weakening in their foundation, because in most organized religions, there's a priest or a rabbi who stands between you and spirit. And there is no turn of the responsibility back to the individual to change themselves, to make a relationship with spirit. And so this is what the Inca were about. There's no accident in the Pope in 900 taking spirit out of the equation, because it fits with the agenda of world domination. It fits with the manipulation of the minds of humanity. And it puts them into subservience, whereas the Inca were putting people into empowerment. And so this is where the difference is that when we become subservient to something, whether it be dogma or cult or religion, whatever it might be, we have not taken on the responsibility to change ourself and make that relationship with spirit. Go ahead, Reiner.
Okay. Erklärt, dass es ein Volk gibt in Kolumbien, die Kogi, K-O-G-I, die leben auf 1600 Fuß Höhe, also ca. 550 Meter. Und die leben offenbar in diesem erweiterten Bewusstsein. Offenbar hat kein Mensch eine Idee, wer das ist. Ich werde das wohl mal googeln müssen. Wir können mit denen nicht in Kontakt treten, weil die eben eine höhere Form von Energie haben. Die nennen sich die älteren Brüder und uns die Jüngeren. Sie verkörpern offenbar das, was die Mayas, die Inka, die Hopi, die Azteken auch schon verkörpert haben, und sagen, die echte Botschaft ist die, dass wir, wenn wir die Welt verändern wollen, uns selbst zuerst verändern müssen. Das sei aber gar nicht so schwierig, weil wir sind ja nicht allein. Wir haben diesen spirituellen Vater und diese spirituelle Mutter. Und da knüpft er an den Rabbi vorhin, der über Gott gesprochen hat und sagt, ja, das ist vielleicht ein Problem, dass in manchen Religionen jemand zwischen dem Spirituellen und der Person steht. Wir sind jedenfalls jetzt offenbar in einer Phase, so sagt er, wo es jetzt knüpft er wieder an den Hinduismus an, wo der
der Gott der Zerstörung oder Kriegsgott Shiva ist das, im Moment regelt, aber dabei, wir sind dabei, das zu überwinden. Okay, Michael,
I have to go in a second.
Yeah, me too. Because we're going to have to be in two more Zooms tonight. Do we have a message at the end?
Well, the most important thing is the T-shirt that I'm wearing. Mm-hmm. This is in the end. This is the most important. The only way we're going to achieve anything is through love. And I reflect on what Willeroo said about the dark forces guarding the sacred places. We're the sacred places. And the forces that we're up against represent the dark forces. And you reflect on what Willeroo said is that when he went to the light and they parted, they made way. Mm-hmm. They made way for him. Mm-hmm. This is the key. Because if we're strong in our hearts, and we're strong with our idea of love and compassion, then we can achieve. The Hindu yogis say this: remove from your mind the idea that you are the doer. Just become the vehicle. So that's speaking to our egos, because when our egos get in the way, then we don't really achieve the purpose for which we're here. And we all have a purpose. We're all meant to be. Each and every one of us holds a piece of the cosmic puzzle. And therefore, what you contribute, what I contribute, what everyone contributes, makes the whole. None of us have anything but the piece. And if we come from our hearts, this is what Willeroo has told me. I do ceremony with indigenous people all the time. But Willeroo said to me, Michael, there's one ceremony for all of humanity, and it's the ceremony of the heart, the fire of the heart, and where you come from is your heart, then everything will be fine.
Okay. Gut, das ist die Message am Ende der Geschichte. Er weist darauf hin, das hat er von Willeroo gelernt, dass wir alle unser Teil beitragen können, um das, was jetzt erreicht werden muss, also die Zerstörung zu überwinden, um das zu tun. Wir sollten dann nicht glauben, weil das würde wieder dieses Ego in den Vordergrund stellen, wir sollten nicht glauben, dass wir diejenigen sind, die das tun müssen, sondern wir sollten uns darauf einlassen, dass wir vielleicht die Vehikel sind, über die das alles läuft. Okay, I think that does sound, even though it's a very spiritual and not really, you can't really grasp it with a rational way of thinking that we're used to deal with problems, but I think I was able to translate it in such a way that people do understand. Most importantly, of course, don't let your ego get in the way, not your ego, and don't think that you can be, that you're the handler. Maybe you're just the vehicle. The vehicle.
Yeah. And I'm told all the time by Susan, my wife, you're too complicated. But the thing is, I really find it very important at this time, for people to come to the realization that there's a much richer story than what they've been told. Mm-hmm. And that rich story is ongoing right now. Like the Kogi exists, the Dogons in Africa, these things exist now. So take hope from the idea that there's elevation already on the Mother Earth.
Okay. Er weist darauf hin, wir sollten daraus Hoffnung ziehen, dass das, worüber er spricht, teilweise ja tatsächlich existiert. Zum Beispiel gibt es diese Kogi, die in Kolumbien leben. Die sind echt und real und die haben eben ein höheres Bewusstsein. Und das sollte uns die Hoffnung geben, dass wir es auch schaffen können, dahin zu kommen. Okay, Michael, we have to really get going because I'm going to have to get on a train.
Just for all of you, December 21st, Jupiter and Saturn are in opposition. This won't happen for another 800 years.
Oh, okay. Is that a good or a bad sign?
It's a very, very good sign.
No,
very good. It's Saturn and Jupiter opposite at 0 degrees, which means you're going fully into the golden age. You just don't know when.
Okay.
Am 21.12. werden Jupiter und Saturn sich genau gegenüberstehen. Das passiert nicht so schnell wieder. 800 Jahre dauert es. Und ich habe gefragt, was das nun ein gutes oder ein schlechtes Zeichen? Er sagte, es ist ein absolutes Superzeichen. Seine Frau hat ihm zwar immer gesagt, er sei zu kompliziert. Ich würde es ihm jetzt auch sagen, wenn wir mehr Zeit hätten. Aber immerhin, diese Botschaft ist tatsächlich ermutigend. Am 21.12. Jupiter und Saturn stehen sich gegenüber. That is great. Okay. We're looking forward for that.
Yeah. Are we on at one with you too?
What
1 o'clock our time.
1 o'clock, what time is that in Germany? I don't know. No, not tonight. There's going to be a special meeting with the people who will, with the medical doctors who are going to have to give the scientific facts, the medical facts, to in particular our lead attorney Renate Holzeisen from Italy. So we'll do that. We'll put you up to speed. Everyone else who was on the last Zoom this past Thursday, Tuesday, we'll put you all up to speed right afterwards. But this is a special meeting that she wanted to be between herself and the medical and technical advisors, because she really wants to get going so that she's going to be ready on Monday when we expect the EMA to admit the vaccine. She's going to want to file it on that day so as to not lose any time. But I'm going to put you up to speed, everyone else too.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Okay. Michael, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Okay. So have a great weekend. We'll talk.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.